Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist. This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspective.
Hello, hello, Madigan.
Oh, hello, my vacationed beauty.
Ugh, man, I'm feeling so rested.
I've never hated you more in my life.
I'm so sorry, but listen, I needed it desperately. I'm so happy we were able to do it. We went to like Arrowhead for like 4 days. 5 days? I think it was like 5 days.
Didn't you leave last Friday?
I left last Saturday.
Okay, I thought it was Friday.
Yeah, we left Saturday.
Like, that was almost a week.
Yeah, it was a while. Plants are doing okay. They were struggling a little bit. I had to trim off some dead plant leaves when I got back, but all in all.
Oh my gosh. Did my friend Lauren ever contact you?
No.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Lauren, I'm calling you out on the show because I know you listen. I know you're killing plants. And I told you to contact Keegan.
Oh, no.
I know. She's going to be so upset. So whenever Lauren hears this episode, she'll be reminded to contact Keegan to save those poor innocent plants.
Help in whatever way I can. Happy like, to do it.
You are the plant whisperer now. So you did have somebody there to like watch over them while you were gone.
Yeah, I had my friends Chris and Cassie, who you know, they live a walking distance, so they came by, fed the kitties, watered the plants for me. So it was all good. But that's wonderful. I feel like a mountain person now. I just want to live in the mountains.
Yep.
I will say,
what?
Trump country up there.
Oh yes. Oh yeah,
it's Trump country up there. Yeah, it's a little jarring, to be honest. It's a little jarring how many Trump signs I saw up there. It's shocking because we live in California and there's this mentality that like when you're from here that you're kind of
liberal.
Yeah, this is a very like progressive bubble, but up there I don't know if it's everyone, but I do think that there are a few very loud Trump supporters area.
I think that no matter where you go, if you go toward places that have a lot of money, you're going to find more Trump supporters. And Los Angeles is different because we have so many artists that are here and everyone's in the entertainment industry, which is typically more liberal. But yeah, if you go outside of Los Angeles in any way, like when I was driving up to like wine country, like four or five years ago, same thing. I was shocked. And when Max and I went to Idaho last year, when we stopped in Nevada and we went to that gas station, I remember talking about this on the show a while ago, where there was like NRA shirts and like,
oh yeah.
I think it's insane. It's another world.
It is. I think, you know, most of California is actually not super liberal. It's like the major cities like San Francisco, Los Angeles, San Diego are liberal. And then everything else is like, you know, it's like farming
to Republican
country. Yeah. So,
well, but luckily San Francisco and Los Angeles are heavily populated.
Yes.
Which is just as soon as I said that, it reminded me. Did you watch the Trump interview with HBO?
Oh, I knew dear. You did. It is a mess.
It's a mess. It just reminded me of when he's talking about how like the population doesn't matter.
Oh, it's
about the
wild.
Cases. It's about the cases.
Let me tell you, listeners, I know we haven't gotten into our stories yet, but like,
I mean,
let
hey,
me
this
tell
is still
you,
news.
If you haven't seen it, you do have to watch it. I oscillated between
it's
being
bring
like
you so much satisfaction.
It brings you satisfaction, but it's also so extremely upsetting. Like, oh, it's both of those things. Like, you want to laugh at it, but if you're not laughing at it, you're crying about it. Because you're like, this is the person who's in charge of our country, and people support him. People have signs in their yards in Arrowhead for him.
That was something that I liked about that interview, is that the interviewer, Jonathan, said, you know, they're not going to listen to me. They're not going to listen to the health officials. They're going to listen to you. They're looking for advice from you to wear their masks to keep yourself safe. If you didn't know, that the whole interview was kind of about how he's been handling the pandemic and things like that. And you know, it's true. If he were to say the right things and encourage his followers to wear masks and, you know, practice social distancing guidelines, they would listen to him.
Yeah, but even if he does that now, I think it's too far gone. It's too little too late. He should have done that in the beginning because now people are so, their heels are dug in. So many people weren't wearing masks in like Arrowhead. Like,
oh, I know.
So many people, we were like walking around and I was like, what?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. On all of the drives that we've done during the pandemic, we've noticed, you know, large like motorcycle gangs getting together, large groups of people getting together, you know, going on hikes, like very narrow, you know, pathways, people still crossing very close together. I can't believe that people haven't gotten the picture yet that like we need to be extra careful.
They don't care. They just don't care. Like that's what it comes down to, honestly. Well, okay, let's jump into the stories.
Let's do it.
Of today. So I have a couple of things. So I'm going to have you go in the middle and I'll kick us off.
Sounds like a good time.
So I wanted to talk about something that I had not heard a lot about, but it came up. I was scrolling through Instagram and I think it came up on like a Now This article. And so I flagged it because I was like, I want to learn more about that. So I've read a few articles about this. Five people in Egypt were jailed for indecent TikToks.
I read.
Have you heard about this?
I read these articles. Yes, it's absolutely insane.
Yes.
I mean, it's not. So, it's not insane. It's just. It's absolutely sad that they are squashed by their
right.
Like, free expression. Go on.
Yeah,
it's
horrible. And it is a. I wanted to talk about it because it is a feminist issue.
Yeah.
Because it's women. I mean, there have been two women jailed and three men jailed, but the men were jailed for basically aiding and abetting the women in posting
like
their TikToks.
Them and helping them.
Exactly. So it's really a suppression of women is really what this is about. And so I got this information from the New York Times and BBC.com. An Egyptian court on Monday convicted two women, their social media stars in Egypt, Mawada Al-Adham, who's 22, and Hanin Hossam, who's 20, on charges of, quote, violating the values and principles of the Egyptian family. And they sentenced each of them to 2 years imprisonment. And the court also found three men guilty on charges of helping post the women's videos. And so they received the same sentence, 2 years. Wild.
Yeah.
So the government claimed that the women's appearance, choice of dress, dance moves, and statements in their TikToks constituted indecent behavior and inciting prostitution.
Yeah.
And that inciting prostitution charge comes from Hanin Hossam. She's a archaeology student at Cairo University, and she actually wears a head covering, which does kind of give the impression that she comes from a more conservative family.
Right.
But she was arrested back in April, so she's been arrested without bail since April for an Instagram video clip that prosecutors called indecent. And in the video, she encouraged women to post videos of themselves to an app called Likee, which I guess pays users based on how many views they receive. They like monetizes their videos.
Right.
And so the prosecutors accused her of inviting young women to sell sex online. And her lawyer was like, nothing said in that video violated the law. And in fact, the video is proof of her innocence, not of her guilt, because never once in that video is she actually saying that. And it's very clear that it is just a stance against these women having any kind of autonomy or independence.
Right. I can see where that would be a window into, you know, finding that loophole of a way to suppress what she's doing, because they're saying, oh, well, you are encouraging women to post themselves online, which would put themselves in like difficult and dangerous situations. Like, I see what they're trying to do, but it doesn't make sense.
Right. They're basically saying like what they're really saying is you are eroding our culture, our way of life in which women are supposed to behave a certain way by asking other women to exert their independence by posting these videos where they can monetize these videos, basically.
Right. And they were popular in Egypt. So they were obviously getting their message out there and they had a very strong influence. So I don't know anything about Egypt's government and, you know, his influence on his people. And
you
know, I'm not going to pretend that I do. But, you know, I know that a lot of other countries, you know, Russia is coming to mind, you know, very quickly, where they're very very aware of the so-called quote-unquote problematic, you know, influencers in the area. Right,
which will... I was going to say we'll talk about that later, but why not talk about it right now?
Talk about it now, Keegan.
Basically, that is kind of the case. So the government has a very strong kind of hold on what is released in the news and in the media, but they don't have as strong a hold, or they didn't, on what was released in on social media. But in 2018, Egypt passed a sweeping cyber crimes law that gave the government authority to jail and fine anyone on social media who it believes uses their content to, quote, violate public morals. So it's a very loose, kind of vague, thing.
And that's what makes it so easy to arrest somebody. If you keep it vague, then you're making it so that it's just this very umbrella, you know, rule. And there's so many things that can fall under it. So that if you feel it's morally wrong or goes against, you know, Egypt's moral culture, that's that's all you have to say.
Exactly. And so the other one, the 22-year-old woman, El Adam, she is a former beauty pageant contestant, and she has 3.2 million followers on TikTok.
Damn, girl.
Yeah, get that. Secure the bag, girl. Get that money. get those coins. But the other girl, she has, or the other woman, she has like 2 million followers on TikTok or something like that. And she knew, I think probably after the first woman was arrested in April, she knew that they were going to come for her.
Oh, yeah.
And so she was on the run for days.
Damn.
Yes, because she was like, she knew that they were going to come and arrest her. So she was running from arrest in May, moving between houses in Cairo and throughout the suburbs, throughout the Mediterranean coast. And one of the guys who was convicted, he was not convicted for helping them post the videos, but he was convicted for like aiding and abetting her on the run, like basically hiding her.
Oh my God.
From authorities. Yeah. So her videos, I mean, these videos, I really want to stress that these videos by American standards or by Western standards are tame. Like they are downright super tame. It's mostly just these girls being silly, laughing, singing, dancing. Their outfits are not even really that revealing in any way. However, the prosecutors called her videos, so El Adam's videos, disgraceful and insulting. So the convictions were the first verdicts in a series of at least 9 arrests since April of young Egyptian women who are prominent on TikTok. Another woman was expected to be sentenced on Wednesday. I tried to Google to see what the outcome of that was, but wasn't able to find anything. Mm-hmm. But in addition to their jail sentences, each woman also faces a fine of approximately 300,000 Egyptian pounds, which
is
19,000 US dollars.
Ugh.
Wild. So earlier this year, there was an Egyptian belly dancer, Sama El Masri, who also faced charges for TikTok. She had posted videos of her belly dancing on TikTok, and government officials claimed that her videos, quote, incited debauchery, and she was given a 3-year jail sentence as well as a fine. 3 years in jail. And
like,
so
the thought of that is so, like, foreign to me and so terrifying to me, because like, if you look at the things that we see on Instagram, on, you know, I'm not on TikTok, but I guess on TikTok, you know, on social media in general every day, you know, that is so much more, you know, I guess, vulgar than anything that these women are doing. It's so scary to think about the fact that you could be in your own home making videos and you're going to get tracked down and be arrested.
That's horrifying. Oh, absolutely. It's very scary. And what's scary as well, and I think something that we should keep in mind, I think we as Americans oftentimes take for granted the fact that we don't believe these things can happen to us. But this year has shown us that we are stepping towards authoritarianism.
Yes.
And if it can happen in other parts of the world, do not take for granted the fact that it can happen here.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why we are so vocal about stopping these things when we see them start to creep up and kind of nipping them in the bud as quickly as possible. Because if you don't, things could snowball Because look, if this was happening in the United States, I hate to break it to you, Madigan, but you and I are in big fucking trouble.
We'd be fucked. We would this go away podcast, forever.
But, and for me, between this podcast and my worst date, where we say some truly wild shit on that podcast, I'd be just in massive trouble.
I think that they would bring the death sentence back for you, Keegan. I mean, just for your shows me, alone.
They're like, you have two shows and both of them are unacceptable. So charges against women for violating, quote, family values have been on the rise in Egypt in recent months. And in July, this last July, anonymous activists, because... Obviously. Can you blame them? Anonymous activists in Egypt have started a nationwide campaign calling for the release of several women being held on similar charges. They made this online petition, which you can go read sections from. I didn't want to take a bunch of time quoting a bunch of stuff from that petition, but basically they're saying that this is a very transparent attempt to block women's rights.
Yeah.
Women's rights, because they're not, they don't give a fuck about what men do.
No.
Because their culture doesn't care about what men do, but they care very much about the way that women are perceived.
Yeah.
And they want them to be modest. They want them to adhere to a certain standard. And when they do something that violates that standard, it's literally criminal.
Right.
Which is really scary.
I hope for nothing but safety for all of those women. You know, it's got to be horrifying to be, you know, sentenced to 2 years in prison for something as stupid.
They're just dancing. Like one of the videos I saw was so silly. It was like she went to a McDonald's and they gave her an ice cream cone and she put the ice cream cone on her head.
Oh,
and
yeah,
she was like laughing.
Yeah.
You know, and like just silly stuff.
I
like
know,
why?
Just, and especially because of that, like these innocent, sweet, silly videos, you see these, you know, sweet, innocent, silly women. And you know that they're going to be spending time in prison. And that's horrifying to me. Like,
right.
That
and
really tugs at my heartstrings.
I don't mean to undermine them at all by calling them girls. But to me, thinking back to who I was and what I was like at 20 years old.
Yeah.
I was a girl.
Yeah.
And the idea that, like, I could be thrown in jail for something so silly
would be
terrifying to
me. I mean, the emotional rants on Twitter I went on as a late teen, early 20-something. Like, you know, you can't always be the smartest on social media. You know, you learn as you get older. Oh, well, I am going to try to walk us all through the Beirut explosion, because I don't know about anybody else, but it was a very confusing day for me when it happened and time afterwards, trying to figure out what it meant. What was your first reaction when you saw it, Keegan? I'm just curious.
So we were up in Lake Arrowhead and Anthony, I guess someone sent it to him. And so he showed me the video. Somebody had taken a video. I think it's probably the most famous video where you see the initial blast and then you see the second blast. And the person taking the video is really far away.
Yeah.
And blows him back, his windows in. And I, first of all, I was like, where is that? What is happening? It looks like warfare. Like, I was like, what's happening? Did someone just drop a bomb? Like, what?
That's what I thought, too. It brought me 9/11 flashbacks. And that's why I wanted to ask you, because I was like, who did this? That was immediately my thought. I was like, who the fuck did this?
Yeah, so, because it seems inconceivable that kind of explosion could happen you know, out of nowhere.
As an accident. You know what I mean? So I found a really great article from the Los Angeles Times that really explained it well for me. So for anybody else that is having, you know, a bit of a hard time understanding what happened in Beirut, here's a little bit of information. So unfortunately, the explosion killed 135 people and at least 5,000 are injured and dozens are still missing, which sounds absolutely terrifying to not know where your loved ones are. And about 3,000 people have been displaced from their homes. So obviously, and also still during a pandemic, this is not good.
Right. The hospitals are overwhelmed.
The hospitals are incredibly overwhelmed. I'm going to get to that in just a bit. I want to talk about the source. So that's kind of how we started this conversation. Immediately, both of us kind of went to this, what the fuck happened? Who did this kind of mindset? So The explosion happened after a raging fire had started at this port warehouse. So this is kind of where all of their like imported goods come in and things like that. And this fire went on for about 14 minutes as emergency workers were responding and trying to put out this fire. And then all of a sudden the fire just rapidly gets worse, followed by a huge explosion. And then seconds later, a final massive blast enveloped the entire area. So according to the Lebanese government, the source of the explosion was 2,750 tons of ammonium nitrate, which is an explosive chemical used as fertilizer, and it's sometimes used in bombs. So they were saying that the ammonium nitrate was stored in the port warehouse after being confiscated from an abandoned Russian-owned ship from 2014 that they were finally able to take the contents off of that ship, and they had decided to keep it in this warehouse port. Lebanon's national news agency reported that the fire first ignited fireworks, and the LBCI news channel reported that the welding work on the warehouse caused the fire. But the official government answer to it is the insane amount of ammonium nitrate, which would make sense. So to put it into a bit of perspective, ammonium nitrate can be as much as 40% as powerful as TNT. So especially with over 2,000 tons of this stuff, it's going to cause incredible damage. And that damage includes a gaping hole that's approximately 460 feet in diameter where the warehouse stood. The explosion destroyed most structures in the port area, which is about 160 acres. The explosion also capsized a 390-foot-long ship that was 1,500 feet east of the explosion. So as Keegan was saying, you know, in that video, it looks like they're very far away. And then all of a sudden, you're kind of being thrown back with the person recording the video.
Did you happen to see the video of the woman? Bride? Yes.
Yes, I posted it on my story yesterday.
Oh my God. It's, so listeners, if you haven't seen this,
we'll post it with our episode okay, tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah, cuz it is so wild. It's so bizarre
it takes it you feels like on a ride. I showed it to Max without telling him what it was, and he was like, "Oh, she's so beautiful."
She's so beautiful.
Oh my, and we were like, "Oh, isn't it like, don't you love seeing like weddings? Because if you like from other cultures, if you did this here, you look like an idiot, you know, that kind of thing." And she just looks stunning. And then all of a sudden,
right? It feels like, and I know that this is a thing that a lot of people felt is, you know, this is a country that has known war, right? And so a lot of these people in Beirut have PTSD or trauma, unresolved trauma from having lived in a war zone. And then you see this, and that's what it feels like. Like, yeah. You watch this video of this woman who's like gorgeous, beautiful, and this like very stylized wedding shoot, right?
Yes.
Like, it looks very like the cinematography is gorgeous.
It's perfect.
And then all of the sudden, it's just, you hear this boom, the camera shakes, it rocks.
It's straight out of a horror movie.
Terrifying.
It's straight out of a horror movie. And so a lot of people have been incorrectly calling it a mushroom cloud, which I just read is what you would call just an atomic bomb.
Nuclear explosion.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Yeah. So a lot of people have been referring to it as that. But I learned today, I did a bit of a science lesson with myself. I won't go into all of it with you guys, but I learned a lot. What that big white dome was, it's actually an overpressure wave, and it's caused by exploding ammonium nitrate. So to me, that pretty much makes sense that that's what the cause of mm-hmm. this explosion was. So as Keegan mentioned earlier, hospitals are completely overwhelmed. The port is centrally located and thousands of people live in the area. There are lots of hospitals in that area. At least five within that 1 mile radius of the port were destroyed. So a lot of nurses and doctors are forced to turn patients away, and some patients have had to be treated in dark parking lots by the light of their phones. So there's so many injured and hurt that if you're not in bad enough shape, I would say you're going to be sent home, but I would assume that a lot of these people don't even have homes to return to. You're just...
Yeah, it reminds me very much of like any other kind of natural disaster. You know, like if a hurricane hits, a tsunami hits, or like a devastating earthquake, it's all kind of the same thing. It's like this shit goes down so quickly that we don't have infrastructure in place to handle it. And then in addition to that, we're in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah. And the other issue there is that one of their main grain silos went down. It was carrying 15,000 tons of grains. And Lebanon is now left with less than 1 month of grain reserves. But according to the economy minister, they're expecting enough imports to avoid a crisis. So I hope that that's true, because that's huge. And also the fact that this is kind of where all of their imports come in and out of. I was talking with Max earlier about just like, how is that going to affect their trade? How are they going to be receiving things and sending things out? And I didn't read a lot about that, but I definitely want to look more into it. And they were also discussing at the end of this article that in 2015, 800 tons of ammonium nitrate ignited in one of China's busiest seaports, which killed 80 and injured 800. So unfortunately, this isn't the only time that this kind of explosion has happened. It's just this one is, I think, particularly because we had it all on video, is particularly getting a lot of media attention. And it was particularly absolutely devastating to that whole community.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and yes, exactly. I think it's also the devastation of knowing what Beirut has already been through, and knowing that a lot of these people do not have the savings, they don't have the ability to rebuild in the way that a lot of us would. Now, again, right. I was on vacation for the last week, so I've been kind of like in and out of knowing exactly what's going on. So I can't give you any specifics right now, but I do know that there are a lot of petitions, or not petitions, but a lot of GoFundMes and things going around in order to try. There are a lot of places that you can donate money to the victims of this tragedy. So I can try and find some of those. We can try and post some of those somewhere.
Definitely.
But they need help. They absolutely need help.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something to me that I feel like I should have seen in like a sci-fi movie or something. You know,
yeah, it's really wild. Mm-hmm. It's really wild. Like, if you haven't seen that video, I mean, I was not prepared for like what I was about to see.
It was just like, what the fuck? Like, that was the only thought in my head. I was just like, what?
What just happened?
Like, it was just sent to me too. Like, I didn't see it on my own. I was just like, what the fuck was just sent to me? Like, did this happen a long time ago? Like, what is this?
Yeah, it was so crazy. It really did look like it was a movie. It didn't feel like it was something that was real. It didn't.
Yeah.
So that's insane. Okay, so I have just one last thing that I wanted to bring up really quickly. There was an attack on a federal judge and her family that happened a little while ago. So this information that I have here is from The Cut and CNN. So this did happen a while ago. It was on July 19th. There was a gunman who shot and killed the son of a federal judge in Newark, New Jersey, at the family home, and shot and injured her husband in that same attack. So Judge Esther Salas, who's 51, she's actually New Jersey's first Hispanic woman who was appointed as a U.S. district judge there. Wow. She was at her house at the time of the shooting, but she wasn't injured. So the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because I watched her video that she just uploaded this week. I think it was a couple of days ago. She uploaded a video to YouTube for the first time speaking out about this situation. And it's really devastating to watch her talk about it, because she was in the basement, or downstairs is what she said. I picture a basement. She's right. Downstairs with her son having a conversation. He's 20 years old. They were having like a nice like heart to heart after having gone to a birthday party. I think maybe even his birthday party. And he had said to her something like, "Oh, I just want to keep talking to you, Mom. I love you. I love talking to you." And that's when the doorbell rang and he went up to answer it.
Oh, no.
So she was not injured, but her husband, who is an attorney and a former prosecutor, he was shot and is in stable condition. The son was shot first, and the judge, Esther Salas, she said that her son, like, moved in front of her husband, so mm-hmm. he took the first shot, and it went right through his heart, and so that's why he died. But investigators have identified a suspect, Roy Den Hollander. This is why I wanted to talk about this. Mm-hmm. Roy Den Hollander is a self-described anti-feminist lawyer with a fixation mm-hmm. on Judge Salas. He died shortly after this attack suicide. Killed himself.
Fuck you, you mm-hmm. fucking coward. I'm sorry.
I know. He's a piece of shit.
And I want to say, I do not think suicide is cowardly whatsoever, but you knew. You knew that you were in fucking trouble, and you took the easy way out. Fuck you.
Well,
dude.
And beyond that, he had been diagnosed with cancer already. He was an older man. He was like in his 70s, and he had been diagnosed with cancer. And so a lot of people are speculating that he decided to act this out before he died. And he actually had a dossier on her and her family in his home, as well as other targets. They have since linked him to another killing of a lawyer on July 11th. So Den Hollander, he had a history of misogyny and a weird fixation on Judge Salas. So according to the Daily Beast, Den Hollander was known for filing several, quote, men's rights related lawsuits. I kind of want to go look at Red Pill again and see if he was interviewed. I bet he was.
We should just Google his name, Red Pill.
Yeah, because I don't want to watch it again. Up. You're right. But so he had filed a lot of men's rights lawsuits arguing that ladies' nights at clubs and women's studies programs at universities were unconstitutional.
Oh, fuck you, you little snowflake.
He's such a piece of shit. Ugh. On his personal website, he reportedly described himself as an anti-feminist. In his writings, he also indicated a consuming fixation with Judge Salas, who he once called a, quote, lazy and incompetent Latina judge appointed by Obama. In his manifesto, he referred to Judge Salas as a affirmative action case advanced by those who he believed wanted to, quote, convince America that whites, especially white males, were barbarians and all those of darker skin complexions were victims. But here's what's weird about this.
Did he ever make any sort of office as an attorney? I just don't how Keegan?
I don't know. I mean, because all kinds of people can be attorneys and they can have all kinds of worldviews and they're not always good. But he filed a lawsuit that went before Judge Salas, before her court in 2019, and he was arguing that it was unconstitutional for women to be subjected for women not to be subjected to the military draft the same way that men are. And she actually didn't throw the case out. Like, she was like, all right, I'm willing to hear your case.
Yeah.
And this somehow pissed him off.
What?
Like, it made him even more angry. What? In his writings about the case, he comes up with the notion that Salas was delaying the lawsuit to further her career. And then he attacked her on the basis of her race and gender. He said, female judges didn't bother me as long as they were middle-aged or older black ladies. They seemed to have an understanding of how life worked and were not about to be conned by any foot-dragging lawyer. Latinas, however, were usually a problem driven by an inferiority complex.
Oh, my mm-hmm. gosh. How...
Right. I mean, and we should have known he was dangerous. I'm sure people did know, because in his writings, in his like manifesto that he left, he wrote, quote, the feminists should be careful in their meddling with nature. There are 300 million firearms in this country and most of them are owned by guys. So he's a piece of shit.
I don't even know what to say. That's horrifying.
Yeah, he's a terrifying person.
That is genuinely, absolutely terrifying mm-hmm. to think about. To say, hey, women, there are, you know, 3 million firearms or whatever number you just said in this country.
Again, you and I are fucked. We have a feminism podcast. If these people want to come for us here, you know,
I mean,
it's not a challenge, but here we are.
You know what? That's a cross I'm willing to die on.
Yes, I mean, I'm not going to not talk about the things that matter to me because I'm scared about it, but like it is something to keep in mind.
It's horrifying.
These people are genuinely so pissed off that the status quo is getting fucked with that they are willing to kill us for it.
Yeah.
And so Judge Salas, she did break her silence. You can watch the video she posted on YouTube. I watched it. It's really heartbreaking because she does maintain a lot of composure. She's a judge.
Right.
But I'm sure she's falling apart. And you see her fall apart. Like, you just see her voice quiver and her... She's talking about her son. Yeah. And, like, her 20-year-old son, it's the worst thing a parent could go through.
Yeah.
And so what... She posted this video, though, because she is wanting to call for judges to be afforded greater privacy protections from the public.
That makes sense.
She said that the gunman who came to her home obtained her information too easily. She said, quote, "In my case, the monster knew where I lived and what church we attended and had a complete dossier on me and my family. At the moment, there is nothing we can do to stop it, and that is unacceptable. My son's death cannot be in vain, which is why I'm begging those in power to do something to help my brothers and sisters on the bench." So the U.S. Marshals Service, who is tasked with protecting more than 2,700 judges, has reported that threats to judges have grown significantly in the last 5 years.
Wow.
So you have this anti-feminist men's rights activist who was very easily able to get a hold of this woman's information and took it out on her family.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
And what was her son's name?
Daniel.
Oh, well, again, our hearts are with that family as well. This was definitely a very
heavy episode,
heavy
I know.
Episode. Do we have anything that you and I could just tip off the end of this episode to make it a little bit less sad?
I have not been on social media, so I don't know if anything good. Well, Beyonce's new film came out, and I've been watching clips of that for a while, and it is beautiful. So there's that.
I mean, and this is where I always feel like I know I'm in the minority. I respect Beyonce and all that she does. I'm not a fan of her music, so I haven't seen it. I don't know.
Wow.
I know. I'm sorry. I know it's a really controversial stance. I respect her. I think she's great. I love what she stands for. It's just not my type of music to listen to. So I respect
it. All right.
I'm not going to watch a whole movie on it, but I'm glad that so many people are happy and loving it. I don't have anything positive to say. I've been stuck in the fucking valley this whole time. So I guess we'll end it on Beyonce.
I approve.
You approve. Okay, great. That's all I need. I need one approval. Okay. Well, everybody, we've still gotten a lot of really great things from you all, ideas for what to talk about. Continue sending those in. We've been getting a lot on Instagram. Continue to direct message us there at Angry Neighborhood Feminist. You can also email us at neighborhoodfeminist@gmail.com. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can go ahead and rate and review us on the business page, and you can chat with the fellow listeners on the group page. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps us out so much, and you will be featured on Reviews Day Tuesday. We also have a Twitter that we sometimes use at YANF Podcast.
YANF
Podcast. Last but not least, if you don't already, get your butt over to Radio Public. Listen to us there. It's a free way for you to listen to us, and it helps us just a teeny tiny bit. All right. With all of that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.